Yesterday, Tessa and I traveled to Washington, D.C. to join thousands of other people walking around the mall area downtown in a walk for the homeless. An interesting thing to see the start of this race, as well as the finishing banner with the capital of our nation in the background, walking for the homeless. Partway around, I guess we were behind this one museum at that point, there was a fella standing on the right. He had a cup in his hands, but he wasn't silent. In his other hand, he had a megaphone. But I don't think he was part of the official cheerleading crew that was periodically scattered on our route. Because with his megaphone in hand, he was asking for handouts. I guess everybody in D.C. has a megaphone. I mean, isn't that what kings and princes use? Whether we call them presidents or senators or representatives or persons in think tanks or talking heads or whatever. Everybody's got a megaphone, so why wouldn't a homeless person? I found it interesting, some of the words he was using, both there and, you see, we kind of rounded around the Jefferson Memorial and on, and he wasn't just towards the beginning of the walk, he was also later on in the walk. And he was using all the right words. I mean, he was calling out Jesus' name, calling us. And I guess he sort of figured that all these people who were out there to help the homeless were an easy mark. I don't know if many put money in his cup. I don't even know if he was homeless. I remember some of the thoughts I was having as I was watching all of this, and perhaps you've had similar thoughts as you've seen persons on street corners and the middle dividers asking for money. I mean, as we pass these people, we're thinking that putting money in a cup could all too easily go in harmful directions for this person. I was also thinking, as I went along, about his use of Jesus' name. Part of me, and forgive me for thinking of this, as I was thinking that in some ways he was breaking that commandment about taking God's name in vain. You know that commandment about taking God's name in vain is not really about profanity, don't you? It's about trying to use God to get what we want. I mean, we break that commandment an awful lot. I mean, it's interesting in politics. Doesn't matter what party you're from or what political persuasion you have, that in some ways we're all seeking to use God to get what we want. I think that's especially true in our nation's capital. I think that's been true of kings all the way along. That's what kings do. In fact, some. And you know, when I say kings, I'm not talking necessarily about those who have royal blood in them. I guess we're talking about anybody who has some sovereignty, if you will, over anybody else. They used to say with royalty that there was this thing called divine right. That they got their privilege from God above. And while we don't say that, we don't claim that for our leaders today, it still is in the backdrop, is it not? To claim that. And yet, having said about breaking the commandment by trying to use God to get what we want. We also have those words of Jesus that say, ask and you will receive. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened for you. Of course, you don't need a megaphone to do that, do you? Do you? What does it mean, my friends, to say that Christ is our King? What does it mean to say that Christ reigns, that God reigns in our lives? What does that mean for you? You know, as you head this week, as I'm sure you will, into your various celebrations. Some are headed far distances. Others are staying nearby and having family come. Perhaps some of you will not be having all that big a gathering. But what does it mean for God to reign over that? Is Christ a part of your daily walk? What does it mean for you? I don't think we fully comprehend. I don't think we fully understand. Just like I don't think Pilate really understood what was going on when Jesus stood before him in those final hours before he was crucified. Did Pilate, whose name gets remembered, he was actually kind of a second-rate administrator in the administration of Rome, when you think about it. He was a governor of one of the trouble spots. He was, if you will, somebody the president sent to Afghanistan to kind of represent the United States. He was the emperor's procurator. A second-rate person who is remembered actually almost as much as the person whom he represented. I mean, our creeds talk about Jesus who was born of Mary and who suffered and died under Pontius Pilate. Isn't that in our creeds? The creeds of Christianity, he gets remembered. But did he really comprehend what was going on? Do we? We have this scene where he is has Jesus under his power, so to speak. Jesus is there before him, and he's trying to make some sense out of this, whether he is trying to look for an out, because he really doesn't want to do what he's being called to do. Does he understand this bit about kingship? I mean, that was the real question that was coming before him. Because in an empire, there's supposed to be no king, no emperor above Caesar. And yet here is Jesus who is talking about another kingdom. But what kind of kingdom? Back to that fella in that walk. Is God's kingdom a place where the poor and the homeless have a voice? Where they have a megaphone, if you will? Is God's kingdom a place where the things, the way we normally operate, kind of gets turned upside down and changed, altered, transformed, where the firsts become last and the last become first? It's not a concept we normally associate with power, is it? An idea we normally associate with presidents or kings. Kind of an upside down nature where the one who would rule is the one who bends down and washes another's feet. That's a strange kind of kingdom, isn't it? I think that's what we're saying with all our fancy talk on this day when we sing of, you know, how Christ will reign, and it's a different kind of kingdom. And when we say, I don't believe when Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world," that he was meaning that you know, this is for a dispensation off in some future time, or that this kingdom totally disregards the world that God created. I guess I believe that God's kingdom is something that is bubbling up and has been bubbling up all around us. And whenever we see the good things of the Lord happening around us, God's kingdom is edging towards reality, and yet it's not yet. Someday it will be fully here, but it is not yet here. This whole month we've been talking about tables. We talked about a table of justice, a table of love, different kinds of tables, because this is a month of meals, and soon we will be gathering back there around another table. Just like this week, we will be gathering together around tables. Can these tables be considered the table of the King, the table where God is very present in our lives, where Jesus is there? I guess I challenge you this week to be thinking, as you gather around a table, and maybe even starting today, be thinking, perhaps there is an empty seat at this at your table, and you're thinking, "Oh, man, we should have every chair filled," but it's actually a good thing that some chairs are not, because it gives us a visual reminder that there is a place where Christ can sit. And Jesus can reign from that place. Not as some king sitting on a throne, but as a servant sitting around the table with other servants. A friend sitting around with other friends. Make your tables this week the table of a king.